Thought crime is about the sharing of ideas without filters or censorship. If you are someone who is easily offended or upset by graphic language, dirty jokes, or politically incorrect comments, this show is not for you. This is Thought Crime. I'm your host, Wesley Fox, editor of PrescientSciFi.com, and joining me is John Fox, my brother and director of Elevated Movement Records. And we're here to talk about the future and how to make it not suck. Basically, that's so we're going to solve like all of the world's problems on this show. And every single one. Yeah. And so yeah, that's our goal for today. We're going to do it in 45 minutes too, so we're going to do it on the clock. But we're basically, I saw, like a lot of people out there probably saw Star Trek Beyond and have seen the show and the other movies, and you see like, it's the future and like there's like no poverty, no hunger. They don't have, like in some of the episodes they say they don't have currency and economics are different and like everything is different, but it's obviously better and people just do what they love and they don't do work for survival or to pay the bills, whatever. And you and I were talking about this like a week or two ago as a pop, you know, just talking Star Trek in general and, you know, back in the day. But then you saw like a documentary on a guy named by the name of Jacques Fresco and his Venus Project, and he's kind of like one of these utopians. Do you want to like, I don't know, tell us a little bit about what you were watching or like what you were, because you called me up and you were like all about it and like you went on like a 15-minute rant about it.
Well, yeah, because I had seen him do a lot and I watched all the Zeitgeist movies as they came out and I have mixed feelings about them, some cool ideas and some other stuff. And he was someone that was quoted a lot, and I really, you know, liked a lot of his monologues. And then I came across what was brought up, the Venus Project, which is kind of his, you know, way to like engineer the future and to engineer future economies. And it kind of seems like it's kind of like what, you know, the end result of Star Trek is. And we always kind of think of it's like, well, how do we get there? And you had told me that. Or reminded me at least that Earth got there, at least in Star Trek history, when they had first contact. And then I remember the movie and all the history and everything around it as well. And that's kind of when, you know, Earth started to change from, I don't know, their warlike ways and, you know, unifying into, you know, a human race as opposed to a bunch of different countries and religions that all fight each other and everything. So, you know, that's always been interesting to me because I think that'd be, you know, a dope future where, you know, there's peace and harmony and we're not all fighting each other all the time. And, you know, we're not polluting ourselves so we could think about getting off this planet and not being a one planet species, you know. And in some ways, you know, it'll like if someone is thinking about this in a politically motivated agenda, they're going to be like, oh, well, that sounds like socialism, communism or utopian bullshit or getting rid of money. And everything. And like, I get that if you think about it, like in this generation or in this, you know, in today's context, you know, but if you just think about it as humanity as a whole, like where we should be in a couple hundred years, where we should be before we, you know, nuke ourselves or, you know, pollute ourselves or there's a virus that wipes us out or whatever, like, you know, we should just be a little bit more far along. And I think when you look at it at that point from a human point of view, you know, I'm not too political on it.
It
doesn't have to be that, you know, it doesn't have to be this big political debate about being an idealistic or whatever. It just would be cool to like talk about humanity and not the next election or the next fiscal year, but the next like 1,000 years.
That's the thing that as Star Trek kind of, because it roughly takes place about 350 years in the future, and there like is no America, Russia, whatever. It's like you said, like we're on multiple planets, so it's like way, way in the future. And Gene Roddenberry, I mean, he had like some ideas on how we got there and how we should be in the future. And he was very, you know, for his time, he was very liberal and very progressive. I think nowadays, like, his ideas are pretty mainstream now. And I think Jack Fresco, who's a little bit, I don't know if he thinks 300 years ahead. I think he's more like 50 or 100, I guess.
I think he tries to say, like, we should act now, or we should be, like, thinking about this direction right now, which I think is good. But he still is, like, missing, like, steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, I feel like.
Yeah, that's the thing on him. I read his book, Designing the Future, which is, like, 150, 200-page, like, not a manifesto, but, like, it's almost like a pamphlet. Mm-hmm. And if you guys want to look at it, it's Jacques Fresco, Fresco. We think it's Fresco. It might be Frico, Freo, or Frasico. We don't know how it's really pronounced. It might just be Fresco. But anyway, like, he wrote a book. He's written a few books, but he's more known for his YouTube talks, his video documentaries, and also the kind of mini city he's building in Florida. He calls that the Venus Project. But anyway, like, since I'm more of a reader, and that's how I got introduced to him, his writing is bad. And that's, like, unfortunate, that it's just a communications thing. He has no editor, and he kind of rants. He doesn't have any citations. He doesn't cite any other scientists or any technology. He only talks about his own work. And to me, that's kind of disappointing, because if you have some great ideas, you know, it's one thing, like, and I think you're absolutely right. Like, when you go to his website and you read some of his stuff, he doesn't know how to do steps 1, 2, and 3. Like, his Venus Project is to find that out. He has a vision for step 10.
Yeah. So and I think it's great. And I think,
yeah, he's a utopian. Know, so
Well, and he doesn't like to use the word utopia.
I know he doesn't. I know. You're right.
But I mean, it would be a close thing to it or something, you know, we would take a lot of stuff out. I mean, we still all have our flaws and everything. I don't think utopia is really obtainable, but, you know, it's a nice goal. It's, you know, it's always good as a human to have goals.
Well, he's not the only one. Like, like I said, Gene Roddenberry has his vision. He just put it in a TV show, and other people have, like, their utopian visions. So he's not, like, the only one. I guess he's the one that's very serious about working towards it and raising money and innovations and things like that.
Because, I mean, I think, you know, technology kind of needs to hit there. Automation needs to hit there because, you know. Well, anyway, so I guess we could talk a little bit more about, you know, what the Venus Project is and what his vision of the future. I know we've kind of given our 5 listeners out there, you know, just talking about that it's something similar to, like, a Star Trek future, where, you know, where there isn't money and technology is able to solve everything and people don't necessarily have to work. Healthcare and everything has worked itself out. And with that, what he mainly talked about is us not having a monetary system and us having something that's called a resource-based economy. And it points out a lot of the inherent flaws in our economic system, in our banking system. Yes, the fact that it all it's not backed up by anything. And I mean, he points out a lot of, like, things that we, you know, humanity, we might be running ourselves in the ground and look back at this time. It's like, oh, yeah. Do you remember in these centuries where we thought, like, this was the way to run the economy and run the world? Like, we were so dumb. We were in, like, a economic dark ages or something. Like,
oh, yeah. For sure.
I feel like that. We're going to, you know, future generations are going to look back at this time.
Oh, I think most people our age, and I think, but I think also all of us in general, like, maybe 15, 20 years ago, we felt like we were in a golden age and that we were on the path to all sorts of great things. But I think nowadays most people agree that we are either on the verge of a dark age or we're basically, I mean, we're at the top. We're, like, basically halfway down the hill towards the bottom. And I mean, just it doesn't matter. Our top two nominees are Hillary and Trump, and there's, like, no solution to any problem that anyone has ever come up with. Like, no one's convinced that anyone in charge knows what they're doing. So it's very easy for all of us to, like, kind of be like, all right, we're in the future when they look back at this time. I mean, and we know it now, like, we're living in it now, but when we're older, like 2040, 2050, like, in the years from now, we're going to look back and just be like, yeah, those years were pretty rough and we were pretty fucking stupid, but and so we're there. So I think, like, guys like Jacques and, like, Gene Roddenberry, like, they can appeal to us now because, like, finally we're getting to the point where we're finally fed up and we're convinced, like, okay, this things really do suck. Now, how do we get out of it? And well, let's talk a little bit like what we see in Star Trek episodes, because you and I said like they don't have money, which most of us like would be like, all right, that's a nice thing to say, but how the fuck do you do that? And but you also see like replicators. So like when you need food or drink, you just go to a replicator and it provides it for you. There's no kind of sense that there's any kind of poverty. People have housing, they have water, they have basic needs taken care of. Education is free, which, I mean, we should be there by now, honestly, on education. Like information is basically free now.
Yeah.
But we don't give degrees for free. So that's that. I mean, that's another fucking conversation we can have for an hour about our ridiculous tuition and bullshit degree system. But like that's the future. The future is not about working 40 hours just to keep your family fed. Like you're working towards what you want to do instead of just trying to survive. And I think Fresco has the same idea with his resource-based economy, which he needs to flesh out. But he basically what he's saying is that technology will take care of like a lot of the scarcity we have now. And that's really what this is. It's like, in the future, things won't be scarce.
It's eliminating scarcity. And honestly, because of our economic system, we kind of need scarcity, you know, in the whole supply and demand, you know, matrix or whatever the hell that you call it. You know, scarcity is just kind of a part of our economy. It ends up, you know, bringing value to stuff and then bringing production up and everything. And that doesn't necessarily need to be the case. We don't have to have, you know, our economy working that way. And I don't know exactly how to like change it overnight or anything. And I think that's something that would be interesting to talk about. And the main reason I called you was to talk about like how maybe we thought that would happen. Like, would it be now the first initial thing that comes to mind, and that's like a dystopian look at it, is that there's a massive die-off that humanity didn't do it by choice. You know,
yeah, like that is the Star Trek timeline for sure, and also others.
We didn't willingly do it, and there's some scary things that could happen in this century. You know, we're at the beginning of it now. There's some scary predictions. We've seen scary predictions in the past that haven't exactly come true, but some other stuff has been coming true. You know, that I thought wasn't, and so like the next century could, you know, if we saw ocean levels rise, if we saw, you know, any of these things happen and we could see mass transportation of people. I don't know. I'm kind of going off there for a second. I'll just go back on topic. And that's just saying that, you know, it's not that out of the question that in this century something happens and a lot of the humanity is hit really hard by it. Even in the point where when we're trying to come up with a pop culture reference of, you know, the Venus Project, Star Trek is pretty much the only one we have. Most future, you know, pop
culture. Yeah, that's my problem.
Are dystopian, and that's kind of sad. Like, Star Trek is one of the only ones you could bring up. Now, you know a lot more sci-fi. You could probably tell me a lot of other actual sci-fi references that aren't all dystopian.
But nobody knows them. Like, exactly. That's the problem.
Exactly. They're not pop culture references.
That's the thing. When you called me about Fred, like Jock, I was like, no, like that's actually similar to Star Trek and Star Trek. That's basically it. Yeah. There's no every movie, like if you took all the movies and the really popular books of the last 10 years, they're almost all like post-apocalyptic, like end of the world shit, or it's dystopian. Like basically things in the future are just going to get worse and we need somebody like, you know, Jennifer Lawrence to get us out of it by shooting a bow and arrow. Like that's what we get now. No one's trying to show the Star Trek future, and even the new movie, which does show some kind of bits of what life is like away from the Starship Enterprise. For like, you know, Sulu has a husband and a child, and it shows how people live like on a station. But like, it's very. But if you go back to the shows, they show like, you know, what life is like on the planets and the Federation and everything. But like, besides Star Trek, nobody likes to show utopia. Nobody likes to show a positive future and then show, okay, that's how we're going to be and that's how we're going to deal with problems in the future. Instead, it's like, okay, we're going to fuck things up in the next century and this is what it's going to look like and that's the problem we're going to have to solve. And like Jacques Fresco and Gene Roddenberry, that's my problem with Star Trek Beyond. And that was the last podcast. So, and I know you haven't seen it yet, so I won't. I don't want to talk about it, but my point is that these movies are about war and not about like, okay, we're going to be enlightened in the future, and this is how we're going to do things. It's mm-hmm. like, instead, they're just showing, no, we're going to have to get in wars in the future, just like we do now. And yeah. to me, that's not, it's not aspirational. We're not aspiring to be something better. And at the same time, Jock and some of these other guys, you got to be careful about charlatans and these people that say they're the ones like, buy my book, read my documentary, do this and that, and we'll find a way out of this. And because there's a lot of bullshitters out there too, unfortunately.
Well, what I kind of saw, and I guess I kind of learned this point of view when I was doing research on like earthships and bio architecture.
What are earthships? Explain that.
So earthships are just these structures, these homes that could function off the grid. You use a small amount of electricity. They're half underground. They save a lot of their energy. They cool themselves in the summer and heat themselves in the winter. You know, there's a lot of interesting technology around them, and you could, you know, live with and even grow your own food and everything pretty much year round with very little resources and not be on the grid. And most cities don't allow you to do that. You have to be hooked up, and that's kind of controversial. But in my research of them, even though there's a lot of great engineering and stuff around it, the main guy around it, I'm blanking on his name right now, sometimes is a little hard-headed, and it kind of has like the culture of earthships and the patents around him. And anytime that it's like kind of centered around one person, it's less about the technology and everything, and it's more about the person, you know, and their vision, and not like humanity's vision and everything. And I don't think Jock Fresco is maybe as bad as you know, he's been claimed to be.
Well, here's like some of the things like from the earthships you said. Like the earthship basically is a self-contained unit. Mm-hmm. You don't need to be on the grid. You can, and actually there are technologies now that are getting closer to affordability where you can actually purify your own water. So mm-hmm. if you can do that, then I mean, these are two things right there.
Well, the earthship, well, you collect your rainwater and you actually use the water in like three different filtering processes, and sometimes like, and then you have gray water that hasn't been completely contaminated with waste that you could use for other stuff like flushing the toilet and everything. And they have this way of doing it and collecting. It's pretty interesting. But you still have to live an adjusted lifestyle to it. It's not living a regular middle America, you know, middle income.
Well, this is lifestyle, like living,
whatever.
Yeah.
Like you kind of have to live an alternative lifestyle around it. So it hasn't completely hit there yet, but it's not that far off. That's
well. Then what? All right. So like, what are the technologies that? Because you're right. Like, because if you tried to do this now, the lifestyle is different than what it is in suburbia or, you know, what we're used to. But it can be done, but you're right. It's going to be a little different. But what are the things that could probably bring it to make it more reality? So I was thinking about this, like, okay, so what are the things that we're short when people are in poverty? Like, what are they short of? They're short, like, they have trouble paying for food, water, shelter. Basically, like, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. Why do we have shortages of this stuff, or why do people have to pay for this stuff? And the reality is that we're already pretty close to feeding everyone and not having them starve to death on the streets. You and I have like talked in the past about our shitty welfare system and how we make people fill all this paperwork and do all these things just to get like a food stamps or an EBIT card, whatever it's called, or to get like any kind of aid. You have to like do all this ridiculous work and prove that you're trying to not be dependent and things like that. And some of that stuff I agree with in terms of like welfare payments, but like when it comes to somebody who literally just doesn't have any money, do they get fed and do they get water and shelter? Like, we're close technology wise to doing that already, but we just are not. The way we do it is still pretty fucked up, but we're close on that. But like you were saying, like with earthships, like we still have to pay the government for water and electricity. Now, if we could do that on our own and take care of that on our own and not have to worry about paying like ridiculous amounts of money to like, so around here, it's like Duke Progress Energy Incorporated or Commonwealth Edison. Like if you could do that on your own, I mean, that's just, so like to me, like electricity and those things, like, eventually, we have to get those things to where they're so cheap and so easy to obtain for a regular person that they're no longer, you don't need money for them anymore. like water is like so is getting to the point where you don't really need money for it anymore. But that's what we need to do. It's we got to get past the scarcity of electricity.
What we also have to do though is we have to get around legislation that is written for utilities and electricity energy companies.
Just they for force, them to they force you to they do it for them.
Yeah, they hold innovation back in the name of profits, which I understand because it's capital. We live in a capitalistic society and everything, but when it holds back innovation, it holds back human progress. I don't care how much their bottom line is and how much good they might do or how many people they employ. You know, they're doing more harm than good.
I agree. And you know, in a small defense of capitalism, I'm not going to fully defend that right now. But what Duke Progress does down here in Commonwealth Edison, what they do when they have government protected monopolies, that is not capitalism. That's cronyism. Yeah. So the capitalism would say, no, you should be able to choose like other energy sources and other competitors. That's what a free market system would say. I'm not going to say capitalism is the answer, but in this particular case, the problem there is actually a government sponsored monopoly, and that is not free market.
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, that kind of put a head on it.
there's three things that are making it hard, and I'll mention four things that are making it hard to actually live this lifestyle. Even if you could afford to get into it, it still takes money to get into it. But yes, when you think about the type of loans and debt people get into just to still have to pay to even live in that, it's different. You know, you pay this upfront cost and then you drop a lot of costs for the rest of your life. You got property tax and maybe, you know, some supplies and stuff. But there's four things holding it back. One is a lot of places won't let you collect rainwater because the water rights are given to, you know, they're grandfathered in from like 100 years a lot of times, or they're just like really deep in state and county or federal legislation. And
fucking old people.
Yeah, but I mean, it's used as an excuse because it's been there for a long time and it's hard to change. But I think one of the reasons why it's trying to be protected is, they want to, you know, farmers, of course, think they want to protect their water rights, but they also want to keep people on the grid. They want to keep people, you know, plugged in.
What's that?
They want to keep people on the grid. They want to keep people plugged in. So, like, that's one of the reasons why it's hard. Like, even in Colorado, we're changing it where you could fill up, like, a couple barrels a month or something, or you could have a max of, like, a couple X amount of, like, gallon barrels and collect rainwater, which is great.
Even for your own consumption? Like, if you're just...
Yeah. No, you can't collect your own rainwater in most places.
I did not know that.
Yeah, there's grandfathered water rights. So, like, so... In a lot of it's illegal to collect your own rainwater.
We did that back in the day at our house on Draper. Like we did collect rainwater, and apparently that was illegal.
I did it once. We got our water shut off. We had a leak in this house, and the landlord didn't fix it, and we ended up having this insane water bill. And we're like, well, you guys should pay it. It's a leak you didn't fix, and obviously they called our bluff to the point where the water got shut off, and we tried to call the bluff by making it work for a little while. We ended up having to pay the bill and everything. And, you know, even though it's his mistake, you know, that's a slumlord for you. But we for that week of protest before we did it and everything, took out buckets and everything, collected rainwater. Thank God it was in the springtime and it wasn't that hard. But I remember doing that and then thinking about finding out later. It's like, oh, that was illegal. That was illegal in Colorado.
Oh, my God.
We shouldn't have been able to do that. And another thing that's holding back this type of progress is building codes. Now, we have building codes, for our safety. It's one of the oldest laws back in Babylon. You know, is that someone could get sued if they built a building and it collapsed and it hurt someone or whatever. They could get, you know, held accountable for it legally or, you know, punished. It's one of the oldest laws. And so I get the point of building codes, but they're also kind of built in there for them not to be changed and redesigned. So alternative ways of building homes, even if they meet the safety standards that the building codes were insured for and why they made them in the first place, they're really technical. They actually just have to be made that way with these materials and these dimensions and stuff. And the reason they made those codes is because with the materials that everyone uses, that's the safest way to do it. But when you completely rethink architecture, it violates building codes even though it might not violate safety, you know?
No, I get it. Yeah.
And, and, that, And that happens to a lot of it too, because it's completely redesigning the way that we engineer homes and the way that we engineer and everything. So all this stuff, no matter how safe it is in violation with most of the building codes. And it's really hard to reverse legislation to allow alternative building. And that was one of the biggest hurdles that the Earthships had in the beginning, is the fact that the city eventually, when enough were made in this small community where they started to do them, they were in violation with building codes and they could all get torn down and you can't.
So that's number two. We got rainwater, building codes. Was there another one that I missed?
Well, yeah, number three, because I got four of them.
Yeah.
Number three is actually, and this has to do with homeowners associations and ordinances in cities and stuff like that. So there's a lot of argument over it and it's different everywhere. But growing your own food and having a garden. Now, you might be able to do it in your backyard, but not a lot of times in your front yard. But if you have a yard, you should be able to grow food everywhere you want. And a lot of times the city will just come in and clear it out because someone doesn't think it's aesthetically pleasing. And then if you want to be more sinister in mind, it's, you know, maybe a little bit of pressure from, you know, food aggregates and, you know, big food companies or whatever to just be like, hey, go in and shut that down. You know, don't do that.
I could see that. Their profit margins are tiny, so I could see that.
I mean, and just because it could be something that's a new trend, you know, and all of a sudden everyone in a generation starts doing it, you know, and I think that's honestly would be a good thing. Everyone getting in touch with growing their own food again and having organic stuff and not paying the high, you know, prices when it takes to transport food everywhere and everyone just...
Well,
that's one of the future things that's part of the Venus Project too, is everyone producing their own things within their own city and every city being self-sustaining. And I mean, it does sound a little hippy-dippy, but when you think of all the benefits that go around with it, why shouldn't we at least work towards that? You know, like, why would we at least have that goal?
My thing on the food thing, because I think you're absolutely right, but I guess the thing I would add is that, one, people should be allowed to do that for sure, but for those of us that are not farmers and don't really want to be farmers or gardeners, there should also be, obviously, an alternative source where we're willing to pay or willing to obtain the food from someone else, because we don't want to grow it. We don't have the skills, we don't have the time, the means. We want to do other things with our time. So, like, I do agree absolutely people should grow their own food if they want to and maybe supply their community with things like that.
Not everyone's
going to do that, though.
No, absolutely. Not everyone has to be a farmer, you know? But it's just like to hold people back that want to hold people back that want to grow a lot of their own stuff. And there's a really, you know, horrible instance that happened recently of this one lady who, you know, owned her house and everything but didn't have much money. But she grew all of her own food all year round and grew, and everything that she grew in her front yard was edible, because they said in the city ordinance or whatever, you can only grow edible food in your front yard or stuff if it, like, you know, violated like their other codes. So she made sure everything, you know, was edible and also was like a, you know, a medicine or an herb or something. And it was hundreds, and she actually used it to treat the different ailments she had. And then just randomly the city came in and took it all down. Now it's all like, oh, well, that kind of sucks. But when you think about that, was her complete livelihood. That was all the food that she ate. That was all the medicine that she had. She probably still went to the doctor and had like some blood pressure medication or something, but they just came in and just took down her entire livelihood. And but anyway, so I'm going to go off on that tangent too much of how sad those stories are when they come in, when people actually are growing their own food and have factored that into their lifestyle and their budget. You're literally taking food out of their mouth. It's not just, you know,
making them pay for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not just someone that, you know, it's like, we don't like your hedges, you should take them out, or you planted the wrong thing, but it's treated that way. It's treated like it's that trivial of a thing to do, to come in and cut your plant down. You know, it's all like, oh, well, you violated, like, you know, the beauty ordinance and you shouldn't grow that color of flower, so we'll just take them out really quick. You know, when it's someone's food, it's different. And it's just treated that trivial. So that's another third thing that holds a lot of things, people back from this lifestyle and actually doing this. And it shows that there's actual public and corporate interest trying to prevent this from happening. It's not just a little bit of a, you know, just some old rules that need to change or whatever. They're being enforced.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So there's a reason they're being enforced. I want to say the last one is, and it's the biggest one, it's actually illegal pretty much everywhere to not be hooked up to the city's power and water.
Electricity and we said rainwater was number one.
But that was collecting rainwater. But yeah. you still have to even be hooked up. So whether you collect it or not, so being hooked up to rainwater and being hooked up to the electricity, so even attempting to do that is illegal. It's not illegal to have solar plant power, whatever.
But you have to be hooked up to the grid. So exactly. If you have surplus energy, it goes into the grid.
Absolutely, you know, and so that's another one that's kind of built in that they actually want you there. And one of the reasons probably why it initially happened is because of the standard of living in this country, and we didn't want to have slum towns and stuff where people didn't have basic, services. And so yeah. I get why the regulation's there. Everyone to be up to building code is required to be hooked up to water and electricity. But reversing that to at least amend it to when people have proper alternatives that are like okayed and thumbs up to actually be clean and okay, and it's not a slumlord or anything, that hasn't had any leeway there. That doesn't care. That doesn't factor into the equation of it. It's still a really hard stance on it, and that is lobbied and supported by the utility companies and the energy companies.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So it's just another one of those where I get why the rules initially existed, but there's no reason why we can't amend them if people meet certain requirements.
All right, I've noticed a pattern with all four of these, and you're right. Like some of the when you explain them, it sounds like, oh, this is just a bunch of whiny complaints from hippies. But the reality is, the bad guy in all four of these is the same. It's the state. It's the government. But you're right. But we pointed out in all four of them that it's not just the government doing this just for the hell of it because they're evil and they like to hurt people. It is the government protecting the economic interests of water treatment companies, of builders, of painters, of carpenters, because I know for a fact in Florida, you cannot have your house painted, whether exterior or interior, unless it's by a licensed painter. And if you don't get it painted by a licensed painter, you're putting your homeowner's insurance and all sorts of other things at risk. And this happened to our family's house in Florida. We had friends paint the interior of the house, and the neighbor was about ready to call the Painters Association and tell them and just totally rat us out on it. It was bullshit. Dude, I could paint the inside of a living room. What the fuck? Why would you need a certification for that? Anyway, but
you want to know what's kind of ironic about that is you guys were painting our late Uncle Kevin's house, who's a painter, who's probably in that association and license.
Yeah, I know. And if he was alive, he'd probably be bitching at us.
Yeah. there's one more little fun part of irony there for that story.
Yeah, Uncle Kevin was a fun... I mean, it may sound like we're being morbid, but actually, we didn't know him that well, but what I do know about him is that he was a funny guy. But anyway, so that's the building code. Growing your own food, that's basically... farms. Oh, by the way, if you get this idea in your head that most farms are owned by families and they're just homegrown folks listening to country music, no, most of them are corporations, aggregates, communes, and whatnot. They're very large and they're very influential. And one example of that is because Iowa is so important, a lot of presidents pledge not to do anything about ethanol subsidies. Ethanol and put ethanol in gasoline, basically. Mm-hmm. Ethanol does virtually nothing for carbon emissions. And to produce ethanol for that increases the cost of corn and all that. So it's good for corn growers. That is why we have ethanol subsidies. But it doesn't make any sense environmentally to do it. Mm-mm. But because
it exhausts soil resources.
It also the corn that could be used to feed people is used to make fuel instead. Because of the subsidy, not because of the market, not because we need it, but because of the subsidy. So the government comes in and helps corn growers by creating the subsidy. At first, it was probably well-intentioned. They wanted to increase the efficiency and lower the carbon emissions of gasoline. But in the end, it doesn't make much of a difference. That's another one.
There's a group of farmers in Iowa, and it's like a coalition of organic vegetable farmers because they don't want to just farm big agro soy and corn. That's already paid or subsidized, or all Monsanto. They want to grow a wide range of vegetables, but it's very expensive too because of the way that they made the market. So it's a lot of people putting a lot of passion and time into it to try and be like, well, we should be farming all across America where farmers farm a little bit of everything, you know, or at least a variety of stuff. It's good for the soil. It's good for everything else. It's good for the communities. Yeah. They'd be closer to their stuff, and they want to promote that. But there's so many economic incentives for all the other farmers in Iowa to do the opposite that it's an uphill battle, and it's really more farming of passion than for them of economics. And that's what's kind of sad, that these things are kind of built in, these incentives are built in, and they could even be, you know, fighting the natural economics of it, the fighting the natural supply and demand.
By the way, the one thing this makes me think of is there was an episode where Jean-Luc Picard goes back home after his ordeal with the Borg, and he goes to see his brother, and his brother's a dick. His brother thinks Jean-Luc is just a tool, but his brother runs a vineyard in France. That's what he does. It's the year 2380, and this guy runs a vineyard, and he lives on a farmhouse, and that's how he chooses to live his life. That's what he does. And Jean-Luc Picard goes off on a starship and goes under the stars. And like Jean-Luc comes home and he's like, oh, yeah, you'd think you're such a big shot going off on starships and drinking synthahol instead of real wine. Yeah. And it just reminds me. And there's a few other episodes where it shows them going back to Earth and they're growing things, even though you would think like, well, the way we do it now, we can just do it, process it in factories. Like, no, in their future, in his vision of it, people still grew their own stuff. And a lot of people do get into that, but we get in our own way. We pass these laws and these codes that were probably well-intentioned to begin with, but have been manipulated by somebody to protect their economic interest. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's why I say, like, I'm not trying to be, like, just to pat our way, like, poverty and famine. What I mean to say when I say, like, we're pretty close to solving those problems, I honestly believe we are. We're just getting in our own fucking way. Yeah. With food and water and shelter. Those are the three I think that we could solve now. Like right now, we don't need new technology. We could solve it now we just have to get out of our own way. But the one thing that I think we do need to and Jacques Fresco, I think, touched on this a little bit, is we do need to find more efficient and cleaner ways to produce electricity and energy. What we do now is dangerous and pollutive, and it's still expensive. And until we get around that, I think a lot of the Star Trek and utopian future things are not possible quite yet.
No, we need a good, clean, unlimited power source, or we need to, you know, completely. There's a lot of awesome new technology that requires a lot less power. So I wonder sometimes, is the future going to be more about unlimited power, or is it going to be more about using very little power to do a lot?
I think it's going to be about using more energy, there's two things. I think you're right, though. Like, I think we're going to use a lot of energy in the future, but where we get our energy is going to be very different, because we do see a limit to coal and oil. There's a limit to how much energy we can produce doing that. But solar and fusion and some of these new things, like, in theory, like, we're not there yet. We don't have it yet. But in theory, those things could produce almost limitless energy with minimal need of natural resources. Like, we don't need to, just atoms, basically.
That would be this milestone, and I'm sure everyone's always talked about it, but when we have unlimited energy, like a big milestone in humanity, it's like, all right, well, then a lot of what we spend time and money and resources and stuff trying to get is now insanely abundantly free. And also to the point where we could just do a bunch of stuff that we wouldn't normally do because we have even more energy than we know what to do with.
You know what I think
it'd be weird, like, you know, when like civilization was turned on or something like that.
Yeah.
Have some fun way to put it.
you know the one example I think I have of a commodity that used to cost a lot of money that's now free. I mean, water is pretty cheap now, but it does still cost money, is information. Like, Wikipedia is my example. Wikipedia, which, I mean, it's not perfect. Some of the information in there is a little bit off, but the fact of the matter is that almost all of us in America can go somewhere, get on the internet, and look up something for free. Information is basically free now. You don't have to pay. Now, you have to pay for degrees, unfortunately, but if you wanted to know something, like how shit works, like if you wanted a how-to on how to fix something in your house, you can go to YouTube, you can go to Wikipedia, and there are people out there that are so obsessed with making free stuff, free software, free fixes, free whatever, and they're like, no, this shouldn't cost any money, this should cost nothing. And that's like the example. Like, we need to like, as a whole group, and this is how programmers are, and that's how the founder of Wikipedia feels about this. He's like, no, this should be free. I'm not going to charge for it. I'm going to ask for donations. And it's the same thing with water and food, is that we got to reach a point where we all just look at each other like, look, this is easy to do. We shouldn't be charging each other for it.
Yeah.
Like, and it's so cheap and easy to do. But it has to get easy to do. If it's not easy to do, it won't be free.
Yeah. And so to also elaborate on that, damn it. You just talked just long enough where I forgot what I was going to say. I'm sure that's happened to everyone out there. They're like, oh, I got something totally perfect of what we're talking about. And then, like, and then I let you finish. And then I'm like, oh, wait. And I'm interested in your last point because I let you finish. And it's fucking gone, man.
Write it down,
that's,
right?
That's a fucking thought crime right there.
All right. What about, I guess we could talk about, like, resources some more. But one of the things I was wondering about, because...
Yeah, let's go back. I think one of the things that's really going to start solving that, and we were talking about people that are giving away information for free. Well, it's also really...
What's that? Speak up a little more.
Well, you're talking about people that are giving away information for free.
Yeah.
And what's really cool about that is with 3D printing, that they make 3D printers... that can make other 3D printers. I mean, it's not exactly like self-replicating. You got to assemble them, and you need a couple because there's always this one part that needs to be made by a different type of one. But they're starting to make these open source devices that can make the parts to also make themselves, and they're all free open source information. And then a lot of the designs are out there for free. Not only could you just hack them on BitTorrents anyway, but they're out there. They're also out there for free. And to start thinking, like, you know, we're talking about in Star Trek, the replicators. Well, the 3D printer is the beginning of that technology.
That's what I was going to say. Dude, 3D replicators are like the first, or I'm sorry, 3D printers are the first generation replicators. Yep. I believe that.
And with that, that's going to be a whole new future of where now production isn't like, is decentralized. And it can happen right in your own home. It could happen right in your own town. And, you know, now that 3D printers are with multiple materials, then they'll start making heads, like how printers have multiple colors and stuff to put down. They'll start to be able to print with multiple materials in the same head. They already have the technology. But when that gets to the point where, you know, a bunch of towns have them, instead of needing a car manufacturer somewhere, they'll just 3D print something like that. And when all of the designs and the patents, I know intellectual property and patents have gotten us really far. But I feel like in the future, intellectual property is going to be something that's going to be more free. To talk about free information, that's like the other part of it. And to actually share everything with humanity. Like back in, you know, Ben Franklin's time, where aristocrats and people of privilege were expected to give stuff to humanity for free and to invent something for the better of people. Like that mentality going back to information all across the board, and everyone has their own 3D printer to do it.
That used to be the ethic, that once you made it, like your family, you basically took what you had and just gave it away. But it was voluntary. Like you were expected to do it. It wasn't legally required you do it. You were expected to do it. It's like Ben Franklin made a lot of money on certain inventions, and once he was like set, he gave it away for free. And you're right. Like I'm this is my background a little bit. Like, I don't believe in abolishing all patent law. People don't realize how many innovations come from IP protection. But I do believe that we sometimes go a little too far in extending patents and in giving them years and years and years of patent protection, when in all honesty, we should just give them like what we should give them, but not keep extending it. 'Cause that's really what a lot of these people do. They file patents, they file extensions, and then they sit on them because they want to get rid of competition. They're not developing like any of these technologies they have patents on, but they're sitting on them to make sure there's no competition. Another thing we should do is take a look at how exactly we're protecting IP and like ask ourselves, are we doing too much to protect the potential wealth of a small group of people to the detriment of what could be helping all of us? And I think it's worth looking into, but I will tell you that you do not want a world where there is no IP protection.
Yeah.
Believe me.
So that's why I know it is definitely a sticky situation, but there are already a lot of people out there that are giving all their plans for 3D printing out there is open source, and people that are developing the technology is open source. And I think people voluntarily doing it, like we were talking about, I think is a really interesting move. And I think that's where we should keep on going, and we shouldn't limit that. And so, yeah, I don't think abolishing intellectual property and getting rid of that process is the answer. But I think it is interesting that there is a new generation of engineers and inventors that are probably going to be shaping the future, you know, that are doing this.
And eventually all this stuff will be off patent. Like the stuff that's being innovated right now, in eventually all of it will be free. It just isn't right now because it was recently developed. So yeah, that's the IP story, and I'm totally with you on that. I have heard from people that think that all patents should be abolished. Now I kind of look at them like, dude, you don't realize like how many things have been developed because we have IP protection, because a lot of these things cost money. Like a lot of the work that's done at the CERN, that Hadron Collider in Europe, yep, or in Switzerland, mm-hmm, all of that is built, designed, and all the work they do there, any innovations or any kind of ideas that a lot of these big, big expensive labs where people spend and governments spend millions of dollars to build these labs and these equipment, the innovations that come out of there, they would not do those because of all the money, upfront money you need just to build the facility. They would not bother with any of that if they could not make any money on it on the other side. It's just a reality of it.
The biggest point about the Venus Project and, you know, getting to the Star Trek universes is how we're going to get there. What we could do right now, even though it's a really interesting vision of the future and that all this stuff happens this way, we know the technology's there. You know, intellectual property is part of it. You know, 3D printing is definitely part of it. Us being able to make our own things and us transitioning into that, us transitioning with technology in a way that we could do this, because we can't really completely do it right now. The way everything exists, even though we kind of had the technology to start doing it. It's, you know, hopefully one of those problems that technology is going to solve, as long as we start having a population that doesn't want to, that's going to prevent people from lobbying to hold back innovation. You know, as long as we don't have innovation held back for the sake of profit. And that's a lot of what has happened in the past 100 or so years, and in the past with capitalism. It's not completely happened. There's been the most innovation ever in the past 100 years.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of like getting into some of like the like societal changes that would happen in the future, like, because, oh, yeah. I mean, for example, the big thing about Star Trek Beyond was that Sulu had a husband, and that was the huge thing. People, George Takei was like, I don't think Sulu's gay. And people are like, no, Star Trek needs a gay character because it's supposed to be about the future and about progress and about all the cultures. Anyway, I was thinking of getting into that, but we're reaching the end of this here. And maybe we'll save it for another episode, because I think that's another important thing too. About, it's one thing about the technology and the resources of how we're going to live and abolishing poverty, but also I think Star Trek is also a lot of, and also Jacques Fresco too. He talks about this too, is how society is going to be organized and how we're going to treat one another. But I think that's a topic for another podcast. So I think we should wrap it up here. I wanted to ask you. Did you, because you're in Denver, Colorado, and you are a enthusiast for recreational marijuana, did you hear about the DEA decision, and how much did that suck?
Yeah, that I think that decision goes to show that the DEA is making decisions based on their own self-interest.
Absolutely.
And the decisions are not based off of science, consensus, or anything else. And it also shows the, you know, that we're in a time right now where we don't need the DEA, and we think that we need them. They didn't need to be created in the first place. I mean, we have police to handle laws. If we have drug laws, we have drug police. And for the DEA being the ones that call the shot, this is obviously something that should be called by from the Food and Drug Administration.
You know? I agree entirely. I don't understand the purpose of the DEA anymore. I really think that those, and I understand why it's very hard to get rid of agencies. What I would suggest is that we abolish the DEA and those agents have a chance to transfer to like the FBI and Homeland Security and just move them somewhere else and have them do, because there, I didn't read the decision, but I heard a little bit about it. It makes no fucking sense. None at all. Their basic rationale for not, for, and I guess maybe we should say, they basically kept marijuana as a Schedule I drug. That's what the decision was, in case you guys didn't know. Mm-hmm. All five of you.
All five of you. So, I mean, as you know, as you're probably smoking with me. You know? And it's ridiculous because they put it on par with heroin and LSD, and that it has no medicinal uses or whatever, and there shouldn't be research for that, so researchers can't do it, even though all the research that has been done on it, as controversial as the research has been to get studied and funded and even performed legally, has all shown it's you know, has medical benefits across the board on so many different things. It is totally something that should keep on being researched. 25 states have legalized it for medicinal purposes, so half of the states. The statistics of how many people are in favor of, like, 89% of the country is in favor of medical marijuana.
Oh, yeah. It's not even a question. Yeah.
61% is in favor of recreational legalization. So those are the two things that the DEA, by leaving it Schedule One, is saying is 100% out of the question, and there is absolutely no point to it. And that's how far off they are from the general consensus of the population. And then you talk about the scientific community, and then it's a laugh.
Even the most conservative people will say, yeah, it's not that bad, but I don't think it should be legal. None of them would ever say it's as bad as heroin. Even the most weird, anyway. But yeah, that was a shitty thing that happened this week, and just another sign that we're getting in our own way. Are you watching any Olympics?
No, I'm actually purposely not watching the Olympics. I think it's I think it's the whole thing is a big sham and bullshit. They destroy the cities they go into. Rio has, you know, they spent $20 billion on it, and it's just the poor just got to watch the fireworks ceremony. They don't get to be a part of it. The freaking city hasn't been fixed at all. There's 85,000 military people there pretty much terrorizing the people. They spent $20 billion on it, and they can't even give them basic sanitation to fix the Bay Area that the Olympians are going to be in. The amount of just disregard, and I don't know how much this was televised, but a lot of Brazilians and a lot of people were protesting to the point where they were trying to put out the Olympic torch when it was supposed to get marched out, and they had to have a shitload of security and military just to even protect it, because everybody is so in that city is so against it. So I think it's a really huge example of just a failure of humanity and poverty and what things are really about. And it's cool that we all get together, I guess, but
dude, the just knowing that the entire Sochi Winter Olympics was built by Vladimir Putin, and nobody in Russia benefited from that. Nobody. Like, they keep saying, like, oh, it's a great thing that Russia got the Winter Olympics or that Brazil got the summer. Believe me, the people of Brazil, and you're absolutely right, the people of Brazil are not benefiting from this. The people who built all those stadiums and our contractors and companies they benefited from that $20 billion. The poor people in that area did not benefit at all, because, like you said, there still isn't workable sanitation in Rio de Janeiro. And also, some of it is not entirely, it's not the Brazilian people's fault. Their government is going through a very tough time. They just impeached their president. I think they just convicted her, so she's no longer the president. And they're in a recession. So, I mean, this was like the worst time to have the Olympics. But honestly, if you can't handle the Olympics, you should not be bidding for them. But because it's about national pride and about prestige and having all these heads of state come there, and it's all about the pride of the state and the pride of the government. I mean, Vladimir Putin took Sochi and made it like his party. And there's a reason that all the stadiums are mostly empty. I mean, nobody's there.
They're military police too.
Oh yeah, that's the thing about because I'm a total nerd about foreign policy in other countries. People got to realize, like, the police in Brazil are all military and they're all federal. Yeah. Like, there's no local, they don't have local sheriffs. They're all federal. So they're all working. It's like if all the police officers you dealt with were all FBI. That's how things work in Brazil. they're not, you can't trust them. They are not really, they used to be a lot worse. They're getting a slightly better, but like in the grand scheme of things, like, yeah.
So I don't want to completely bash the Olympics and everything about it, but the way that it's structured and organized, and you know, the people in charge of it and the cities that end up, you know, having it, it's just it's a big clusterfuck, and I don't really want to be a part of supporting it anymore. I don't want to say that I'm against everything that's about the Olympics. You know, down to support it in theory, and maybe if it got changed, but you know, I'm not gonna watch any of it. I don't really care to support any of it. And
it
might seem annoying, and it might be like, oh, well, you're that freaking annoying guy, you should just suck it up and just be all pumped about it. But I mean, I kind of think the opposite. If you really feel a certain way about something, you should be about it, you know, and you should put your money where your mouth is.
I do watch certain events. Like, it was cool to watch the women's gymnastics team, like, basically obliterate the competition. Simone Biles, I think I can never remember if it's Biles or Bilas. She's probably the greatest athlete on the planet at 4'8". I mean, she's a little tiny gymnast who is just insanely strong and insanely gifted, and it's just incredible to watch her work. And so, but that's why I try to, like, I'm not spending any money watching the Olympics, so nobody's benefiting. Yeah. So I don't feel that, but I do feel it though. Like, if anyone's going to ask me to spend money to watch the Olympics or even do anything involved, I'm not going to do it, because for the reasons you just said, mm-hmm. I want it, but I do want to, like, kind of at the same time, give credit to the actual individuals that are doing great things.
They're insane. I mean, the dedication in their lifestyle. Props to all of our American Olympians, and then all the ones that are competing. I don't want to be a dick about that.
Dude,
they are freaking champions, and shit is nuts. Oh, and by the way, Michael Phelps, champion Olympian, recreational pot smoker.
Yeah, yeah. He likes to. Well, he used to like to party. He kind of cleaned up his act, but yeah, he's all about. Yeah, he basically, after he won those medals in Beijing, wasn't it him? There was a picture on Twitter of him with a bong.
Yeah, he's a recreational pot smoker.
He smokes.
Mean, a lot.
Well,
a lot
he had to stop. He did have to stop to get into this one.
Absolutely. You don't have to be a committed smoker or whatever. It's just like, you know, athletes fucking enjoy a beer when they celebrate, but they don't drink while they're training.
Yeah, good point.
You know, so like, it doesn't matter. It just shows that it's all, like, you know, the whole lie that we've been spoon fed that it's for losers, and it's like, nah, it's for champions. You know, like, excess in anything is dumb.
Yeah.
And you could actually argue that they're all guilty of excess in whatever fucking sport they're doing, that it's a borderline obsession and they need to get a life. But no, they're champions. It's cool.
I sense a little bitterness in there.
I'm just saying, the argument could be made.
You know, the one cool thing I saw, because there's always like world, and then we'll get off this and sign off. But yeah. Like, the one cool story I saw was, I watched the rugby championship, the final gold medal game between the United Kingdom and Fiji. United Kingdom is like 70 million people. Fiji's like 1 million. And Fiji kicked the shit out of them won the gold medal. It's the first medal that Fiji has ever won. And they were going ape shit. Like, they showed, they actually, you couldn't see it on NBC because NBC doesn't send anybody to Fiji. But they showed pictures on Twitter and everything else about the people in Fiji just going nuts. Because rugby is a big deal there. By the way, rugby is a very cool sport in general. Yeah. But like, they didn't just beat Great Britain or United Kingdom. They beat the fuck out of them. Also, it's like the movie Cool Runnings, the first Jamaican bobsled team. And they finished dead last, and then they returned to Jamaica to start a business making beer. And I remember the character from Futurama, Hermes, saying, "A true inspiration for the children." Basically going home to sell beer. I love that show.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff.
All right. Wait, do you have something else?
Yeah, other than, like, I don't know, we should all come up with ideas on how, like, the future could be better and we could, like, stop sucking. And I don't really have an answer for everything we could do today. And I think it'd be cool if we all just talked about it and maybe, you know, tried.
Yeah, let's try to not suck so much.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this has been a bad. This is a bad year. We can't really claim we did too well this year as a species. So.
Yeah. So I think it takes, you know, we should all have some reflection.
Yeah, we didn't do so good. This is the year we want to forget.
So the three of you that are out there listening, you know, have some reflection.
We're gonna inspire our audience of four. Yeah. But, all right, real quickly, if you're a self-published author or you have a book through a small press and you'd like a review or an interview here on Thought Crime, email me at jwfox@prescientsci-fi.com. I review science fiction almost exclusively. Follow us at Prescient Sci-Fi on Twitter, and also check out prescientsci-fi.com. Let's see.
Well, I mean, I'll cut you off right there. You know, go to elevatedmovementrecords.com. Go to Beatport, iTunes, Amazon, anything. We got new releases by Joe Roller, if you love house music, progressive trance, all that good stuff. As well as we got this brand new artist here, this 20-something guy, B. Gordon, has his new release, Escachar, coming out August 30th. And we're just going to have a lot of new music from him. And so we're just going to keep pumping it out. So go to Elevated Movement Records and search it on your iTunes or however you like to stream or download music.
Yeah, excellent. Is it Ashugar or Azucar? Like, is it Spanish for sugar, or like, what is the
Escuchar? How do you spell it? It's like Escuchar. It's like to hear, to listen.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So, how do you spell it? So, if they want to search for it,
Was it E S? I gotta read that. It's like,
all right. So, B Gordon, right? That's his name.
Yeah.
Space Gordon.
Hold on.
How are you going to promote him if we don't tell him how to find him?
No. It's just you could phonically go through it. I'm probably like, you know, murdering the phonics of it, but it's it's Escuchar, Escuchar, Spanish for to listen or to hear. It's this amazing house track. He makes all of his music inside the box in like drum machines and stuff. And
alrighty, B. Gordon, Ashugar. That any other things we want to plug? I know you and I were both drinking Jameson. We're trying to think of a good slogan for Jameson, like, because we want to get sponsorship money. So I was going to say, drink Jameson, fun for the whole family. That's the best I can come up with. I don't know. I was trying to think of a totally irresponsible, and that will do it for this episode of Thought Crime. Until next time.